Welcome to The Scaling Show, in collaboration with the South African Chamber of Commerce in the UK. We've seen dramatic market shifts over the past few weeks, and businesses have had to answer many questions. However, amongst the uncertainty, there are a number of innovative tech companies pushing the boundaries. In this series, we talk to those founders, CEOs, and industry veterans on the front line of innovation. I'm Richard Doty, founder and host of The Scaling Show.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Kevin Mazzio, co-founder of Alternative Circle and serial entrepreneur. Hey, Kevin. Great to have you on the show. Hey. How's everything going?
I'm doing well, Richard. I'm always happy to see you, smiling as ever.
Yeah, always smiling. Sounds good. Let's kick off the show by you telling us a bit about your background.
I started off my career in investment banking. Unlike most people, I didn't go straight to college. I started working immediately. So I went to college and working. It was a very interesting time in Kenya. It was the largest IPO ever, the Kenjan IPO. I was basically a data clerk. Did that for about a year. And then in my role, there was a gentleman who noticed I had a bit of interest and a lot of talent, hopefully, not the other way around. And hired me to be an investment manager at the what you call the Achama. So that's like a private equity company within the African context. It's an investment holding co. And it was very wealthy Africans, Kenyans. This is actually where I learned how to cut my teeth. I learned some basic principles of pattern recognition, ideas on how to identify good opportunities. I also learned the importance of people and relationships, what networking really meant. I also learned how to smoke a cigar, you know, at 21 years old. My father didn't like it, but yeah. And then at some point in that 4 or 5 years later, I decided to jump on my own, started a manual lending business, ran that for about 5.5 years. Another great experience. This gave me insights into different value chains, business models, and again, the importance of relationships and how relationships are a very useful tool in risk management. And then when I was working at this finance institution that I co-founded, in about 2014, I got an SMS inviting me to take a digital loan. And I was flabbergasted. And the reason I was so confused is because I know the laws that go into giving loans. And I couldn't understand how they had done KYC, for example. And I was like, this is interesting. How did they do KYC? And then the second thing was, you know, how did they do the risk management without checking me out? Like, they didn't know who I was. They hadn't seen my face. They didn't know where I was. How could they surely give me a loan? And then, of course, there was, how do you disburse the value and how do you collect? And so I started testing the product and I could see that it was the beginning of something really interesting. I'd say it was akin to sort of the first ever credit card. Must have been a very useless looking product, but had a lot of potential. I could see the use case and how it could potentially positively impact entrepreneurs like me, and in particular entrepreneurs at the bottom. I hate calling it bottom of the pyramid, but sort of in the micro informal sector, because I knew how difficult it was to build a credit history. 2 years later, I found myself co-founding Alternative Circle. The mission and vision of Alternative Circle are very straightforward. We want to build the largest network of entrepreneurs in the world. And the mission is to provide solutions to them that enable them to make more money. It's that simple. Entrepreneurs are hustlers. Money, you know, all they want to do is just make that extra margin. And then the idea is at the back, we have values of sustainability, integrity, and just clear transparency. So yeah, in a nutshell, that's me. I'm a father of one, and hopefully about to get married soon.
Oh, that's a great story. And just to pick up on a couple of things you said there, maybe making the move from the investment management space into the entrepreneurial or business ownership space, can you explain why you decided to do that? Why did you decide to go out on your own? Was it opportunity or what exactly was it?
It was many things. My daughter was 2 years old. I wasn't making nearly enough money to cater for the expenses required to raise a child in today's modern world. The other piece was sort of inspiration. My parents are a really great influence and inspiration to me. I'm very fortunate that I have them as my parents. And my dad always tells, I'm his firstborn son, and he always tells a story where when he found out my mom was pregnant, he quit his job and started his own law firm. I look at his journey and I'm like, there was a time to take a chance. It was then. I was also a young man that had experienced a bit of success, but I could feel that I was not doing what I truly wanted to do. And I felt that if there was a time to start a business, and in particular fintech, which is a business of the future, why not be at the forefront of this cutting edge industry and help and sort of shape and form it? That's how you sort of build impactful, world-changing things.
Yeah, and then, so why the micro sector? It seems like you want to help not just entrepreneurs, but you want to help a specific set of people, the person owning the kiosk, and those type of entrepreneurs to really scale up and have a big impact on the wider or the mass market.
That's a beautiful question. The first thing that I was trying to solve was change the narrative on the African entrepreneur. There's this very, I mean, no offense to your listeners or people in the West, but it's a narrative that's partly the West's fault and our fault as Africans, because we're not telling our own stories, that we're weak and useless. And what people don't know is that when you walk in Nairobi and you see the grit and the perseverance and innovation, it's actually mind-blowing. I know of entrepreneurs who spend $100 on a Monday, and by the end of the week, they have, you know, $500, and that is able to pay for expenses, school fees, healthcare. And within our context as Africans, we are very family oriented. So the eldest man or the eldest woman in a family usually has 7 or 8 other people they have to look after from the village. And so you find that they are very hardworking, very resilient, but there were no solutions that were designed for this specific marketplace. And there was a lot of potential, and they represent nearly 70% of the businesses in the market. And so in my mind, it was a no-brainer. If I grow 10% of the 2.2 million businesses by 10% every annum, I think you'll have a catalytic effect, not only in terms of money made, but even society. You'll uplift several people into the middle class. You'll have reduced elements of crime and sort of all these other societal menaces that happen. And then you sort of solve opportunity for then the generation that's coming behind us, because Africa is a young continent. Africa, Kenya is a young country. Our average age is 17. When my dad was being born, there were 8 million Kenyans. Today, every year, 1 million people turn 18, right? So you've got this huge youth bulge that's coming. We have to ensure that they've got opportunities. I just felt like the best way to do that is just give the informal sector entrepreneur who's already working, already figured out how to make money, a way just to make more. Was that simple?
Great. I mean, it's very impactful what you set out to do, and obviously been very successful over the last decade or even more than that now. But in the early days, I assume there were some obstacles to overcome. How did you raise awareness and funds in order to move your business activities forward in those early days?
Well, the first thing is obviously the sense of understanding what my vision was and what our vision was, and finding the right partners. I talked about relationships as some of the key lessons I learned in my earlier days. And I had been building relationships with different people and stakeholders in the ecosystem. Over time, you start meeting the same people over and over again. You start hearing people, you start meeting like-minded individuals. And that's how I came across Credit Info. Credit Info Group is a company based in Iceland. They have a founder by name Reynir Grettison, an amazing guy. Not a similar entrepreneurship story, but most entrepreneurship stories have very key similarities. And I think he's a huge Liverpool fan, and so we're enjoying those kinds of interactions. You're a Liverpool fan, Richard?
Yeah, my sons.
a good team to be supporting. I'm an Arsenal fan. Yeah, and so he bought in and has supported the business for the last 4 years. It has been a fantastic relationship despite the challenges. And so my feedback there, my key to give away their takeaways was basically building relationships and just shouting about my vision from the treetops without fear of being embarrassed by what I'm saying or scared by my ambition.
And relationships is a big thing, a big topic. I mean, we probably could have a separate podcast just on that. But you seem to be building relationships quite uniquely. I mean, listen, I'm here in the UK. You've spoken to a friend and a partner out in Iceland. So you cast in the net. You're looking beyond the African borders and seeing what you can learn, what partnerships you can form and bring that back into the continent. I mean, fantastic. How's that all worked?
So again, I said my parents were defining factor in that I had the opportunity to travel quite extensively as a young child. And I also was fortunate to go to a multicultural school. As a result, you build up a very keen sense and an awareness that we are more alike as people than we are different. And there's certain things that certain cultures do very well. And there's certain things that they do very badly. And then I was also introspective into my own culture and my own context. And there's certain things we do very well. In fact, I think we do a lot of things very well and we need to shout about them a lot louder than we do. But there are also certain things we don't do very well. And so I was seeking partners that could complement, you know, what we don't do well with what we already do well in terms of strategy, in terms of alignment, in terms of vision, in terms of how to do things, so how to get things done. That was key. I'm not afraid of borders. I have friends in Somalia, I have friends in South Sudan, and I have friends in the most exclusive clubs in London. So building a network of friendships and real relationships with people is key to me. I love listening to people's stories. I think everyone has such a unique story. When I met you the other day, your story was so fascinating. That is humans. You know, everyone has a cool and interesting story. So yeah.
And, you know, during this period in the early days, there must have been some challenges and some lessons learned. Which were the biggest challenges that you had to overcome and how did these fuel your success going forward?
Right now, the whole world's talking about race and because of what's happening in the US. And I think the biggest challenges I've faced so far are fundraising within the local context. So it's hilarious that it's easier to fundraise in the US, in the UK than it is in Kenya. I feel that that is a super strange phenomenon, particularly in the tech space. It's not our local context fault entirely. I just think we've not evolved to the point where there's enough wealth to take VC bets at a, you know, $5 million ticket size. There are very few people who could do that. So that's one of the challenges. But the other challenge is that being looked over every single time because you're African, because you're skin color, that takes a toll on you. When people listen or hear like about my vision, I've gotten feedback that maybe for you as an African, that's a little bit too big. So there's things like that. But again, it's the name of the game, right? So you sort of have to work in the world that you're in and take it and try and change the narrative. And so I don't have bitterness. I have a mindset that I want to show the world that Africa can produce world-class people, world-class companies. We can deliver outsized returns and we can be as big as Amazon within our context here as well, owned by us, built by us, in partnership with different various stakeholders. So those would be the main challenges. And then, of course, the other main challenge would be talent. And the sales cycle in Kenya, in Africa, the sales cycle in fintech is 2 years. In the West, it's 6 months. But then the perception that the West needs more capital than we do, therefore then creates this mismatch in allocation. And so you find that African startups really do struggle in the early phases. But I'm very confident that we're going to build an Amazon-sized business in the next 10 years, and alternative circle in particular. I'm quite confident we'll do that.
Yeah, and I chat to speak to many entrepreneurs, co-founders like yourself, and a lot of them have a purpose to their business, to themselves, and a passion that drives them forward. Have you found yours yet on your entrepreneurial journey?
My passion is entrepreneurship. It sounds weird, but like, I love the art and the science of business. And I have been studying business for as long as I remember. My favorite thing to do is reading financial statements and watching CEOs give lectures. My family, my daughter who's 11, thinks I am the most insane human being because when Berkshire Hathaway is having their annual general meeting, which is 7 hours long, I will sit and watch the full 7 hours and take notes for those 7 hours every year. And so my passion is entrepreneurship. My purpose is to sort of leave the entrepreneurship ecosystem in a much better state than I found it. I want capital to be available in the both forms of equity and debt. I want African entrepreneurs to dream big and to know that they can. And so my purpose is to set an example for my generation and the generations to come that we can build businesses that can rival those in the US and those in China. But we have to work hard and we have to work smart and we have to put in the effort. So that's my purpose. I want to be the best entrepreneur of my generation, the way Warren Buffett was, Robert Smith is, you know, stuff like that.
Some great aspirations. And well, you are on your way already, as we know that. Looking at alternative circle, and maybe focusing on that for a sec, could you talk through how the idea came about and also how it's evolved as a business over the last few years?
Well, the idea started off as a very simple rudimentary app, you know, lending money, da da da. And then because of networks, we got picked as one of the top 12 startups in the InnoTribe Challenge in 2016 that took place in Mauritius. And I was exposed to a world. I had never done business cross-border and I had never been involved in a technology business before. And so this was my first foray into this ecosystem. And I met some of the most brilliant minds at this conference that opened up my world into what we could be. And a good friend of mine now who I met at that conference, a gentleman by the name of Aaron Fu, insisted that we go to Singapore together. And I sort of picked I saved the little savings I had and we went. I saw what dreaming big could do for someone. And one of the things that Aaron did was to take us through the story of Singapore itself and how it was a little island and what it had become as of that time. And that changed my whole perspective on life. It opened my world up to possibilities. We even then won a challenge in Singapore at the Monetary Authority Challenge at Singapore, the Central Bank. We were the first African company to make it to this forum and this competition. And I got on stage and spoke about my business to over 3,000 people. And those moments were defining for me because I could now see what we could become from a global context. I could see what the West and the world thought of us in terms of Africa. It was actually positive. It wasn't as negative as people think. There was a lot of hope. My previous roles had allowed me to travel around the continent as well. And so I also knew there was a sense of hope in the continent, on the continent. And so the ambitions of the product became larger. And so we started off as a rudimentary product. And over the years, we wanted to rival WeChat in terms of product offering and embedding financial services and layering that with non-financial services like news and business information, which is where we are today. Yeah, and every entrepreneur knows that, you know, when you open a shop, you pray for people to come in. And we had the Sheikha got 110,000 customers within a year with very little marketing and very little resources over the 2018-2019 period. So Now the next phase of the business is to scale it to the point where in 5 years I can say, Richard, we have 200 million customers across for 50 countries in Africa. And so that's the next phase.
And can you explain for our listeners what specific particular problem Alternative Circle is solving for the market?
Well, the problem is just that seamless, one is the informal sector is not served appropriately. So you hear a lot about financial inclusion, digital loans. What we don't hear about is how do you determine what an informal sector entrepreneur looks like without structured data sets that are available in sitting in databases. So one is we figured out how to identify an informal sector entrepreneur using an algorithm. That's a fantastic thing. And the second thing is, how do we then solve the problems that are unique to them? Are they potato sellers? So do they know that potato sell have a higher price in this part of Nairobi than this, that other part of Nairobi? So business information services. So giving that entrepreneur real-time data that they can use to make great decisions to make more money. News. I'm sure, Richard, like you, I read the Financial Times every day. Why? Because you want to know what the hell is happening in the world. Just because I sell mangoes for 10 bucks a day doesn't mean I don't want to know what's happening in the world. I just need to have it more contextualized for my world. And so the news segment, again, building a business news culture for that segment that gives them relevant insights and analysis that can help them also scale their businesses. There's one thing that drives Africans, and this is a global phenomenon in emerging markets, is that we all want to take our kids to the best school. So you find that everyone plans their business based on school fees. And if you know anything about university fees, they're expensive. So if I'm selling 1,000 mangoes today per month, by the time my daughter is 18, I need to be selling 200,000 mangoes per month. And so how do we get these entrepreneurs to move from that, you know, $10 to $100 to $100,000 as any other normal small business would do. And so that's the problem we're solving. We're helping businesses scale.
It sounds like you are very focused on the micro side of entrepreneurship, as you mentioned, and also the informal sector where your tech Alternative Circle helps businesses scale. Can you provide a simple case study of how the tech is actually working today? Maybe talking about a mango seller that you help in something of the sort.
So I'll give you context. So 3-4 years ago, if I was a banana seller or potato seller into the fish and chips joints in Nairobi, I would get my potatoes from a place in Kenya called Kingango. They would then be brought to a central market in Nairobi, and then I'd buy, so if I had $10, I'd buy $10 worth of potatoes, and I'd go serve my customers normal. So if I needed a loan, I would have to go apply to a bank or microfinance institution, and it would take me 2 to 3 days on the lower side and up to 2 months on the higher side. So if you went to the banks, it would take you about 2 months. If you went to a Shylock, it would take you 2 to 3 days. Now, this is what Chika does. Chika figures out that Richard is a potato seller and gives you a first loan that isn't a lot, but is enough for us to build a relationship. So say $5, and you buy $15 worth of potatoes. The informal sector has very high margins, and they're up to 100%. So you make 30 bucks. By you taking my $5 loan, you've made an extra $5, so 100% return. And this is a study that was done by the Digital Lenders of Association of Kenya and has shown that the informal sector has high margins like this. Now, the second, third, fourth loan are gradual in terms of size. But by the fifth loan, we feel like we formed a relationship with Richard that is mutually beneficial. You see the value we bring to the table and we see what we could do together. And so we improve your limit to, say, $20. So now you can go to the market and buy $30 worth of potatoes within 30 seconds. And if you don't need the money, you don't need to take it and you're not charged for it and you can pay it back immediately. And so what we find is our user case is now that we find the informal sector workers because their trading cycles are so short, take 2 to 3 loans in 1 month to improve their sales. And I think that's quite impactful. So if you take this same potato seller 4 years ago and the potato seller now, they have the ability to build their business in a much more sustainable way.
Great example there. Thanks for that. And you know, when I guess when we spoke a few weeks ago, we had just at the beginning of this crisis and this pandemic, and businesses had shifted, market dynamics that had shifted. What has been your strategies to either neutralize the threats of this pandemic or grasp some of the opportunities that have come out?
To neutralize threats, what we've done is to sort of ramp up our lobbying efforts with the governmental and regulatory framework so that we can de-risk our business models a little bit more, because digital lending has been used all over the world to ensure that bailout funds get to those that need it. So in the US, the Cabbage, for example, has released about $4 billion to 129,000 SMEs. And 75% of those 129,000 had no manual intervention whatsoever. So we could do something similar in our context. And so we've ramped up those lobbying efforts and public relations efforts. In terms of seizing opportunities, we've also ramped up the ability to catch up, to partner with banks. And so I've literally been talking to every major bank in our country to see how well we could partner to share the story and the vision that we have and align it to what they're trying to do as well. And I'd say this, it's never been a more difficult time to engage, but it's also never been easier to get certain meetings. So we're getting into the room. We've not closed anything, but we're getting into the room. And that's what's exciting in terms of seizing opportunities. I think we are at the beginning of that digital, I don't like revolution, but that digital new world order that Africa much badly needed to move it from a poor economy and a poor base to a middle income, wealthy continent in the next 30 to 40 years, in one generation, just like China. So I think the opportunity has never been this large, in my opinion.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys have been busy, and also it does seem to be a bit of an acceleration or foot down on the gas when it comes to digitizing large parts of ecosystems and also continents. We touched briefly on the opportunities for your business, but what else do you see down the pipeline from an opportunity perspective, not only for your business, but also the wider industry, fintech industry going forward?
On a fintech side, I think it's become obvious that payments should be cashless because it just makes things a lot easier. Governments can be able to track and collect taxes easily. Companies can be able to do accounting and reconciliations in a much easier fashion. They can also engage with the customer without having to interface with them manually. And so the payment side is huge. I think you've got a huge opportunity as well in insurance products and savings products, because then we've also understood the certain risks that we were not aware of before the COVID crisis. I think the other huge opportunities, you know, when you hear world leaders speaking of universal healthcare, global universal healthcare, I don't see how fintech will not play a role in ensuring that happens, because fintech has KYC verification tools, has fraud risk management tools, has distribution, e-value distribution infrastructure. And so we would be a critical piece in that infrastructure for something as ambitious as universal healthcare. Those are the different sort of key things top of mind. E-commerce is obvious. I think AI and voice-activated digital financial services as well is going to be pretty obvious in the near term and medium term, particularly with the technology of 5G and Internet of Things coming live in different parts of the ecosystem. I think fintech is sort of like cars in the 1950s. It was really cool for the last 40 years, but then now you sort of now will see the real impact of what automobiles could do. And I think with above 40% smartphone penetration across most major markets in the world, you're about to see the tipping point of fintech.
Some interesting points there. I mean, you walk through payments, insurance, e-com, healthcare. There's going to be a lot of change and a lot of opportunities. Previous guests have also mentioned that some of the barriers are to entry into these different market segments are also reducing. So as an example, some of the regulatory hurdles that they need to overcome aren't there anymore or have been relaxed to allow tech companies to provide a solution, even if it is near term. Are you also seeing the same thing? Some of the challenges and barriers, you know, being relaxed to help people and businesses push on right now?
Across the world, I mean, you're seeing what the central banks are doing globally. It's unprecedented to the point where there are now people saying, let's slow down on some of these interventions until we know the real consequences of them. In my country, we've got a very open regulatory framework that was started off through the M-Pesa innovation. We are also in the unique position of having an economy that was not resource-driven. We are services economy. And so we have a lot of talent in country. And so you're finding that government is opening up to the idea of listening to private sector and cutting edge industries like ours. And we're pretty hopeful that we will be an example to the rest of the continent on what can be done quickly and effectively to reverse or to manage an economic crisis. That's really key. I think our government in particular is really trying to manage a potential economic crisis. And I think we could be a really good, case study for what to do right.
Again, some really good points there. And at the top of the show, you mentioned that you're aggressively scaling right now. You're moving through different cycles of growth. So over the next 12 months, what are your growth plans and how are you going to be achieving those?
Well, I'm very confident we'll have a banking partner in no time, where we'll be able to have the embedded digital financial services into our super app. And then the next phase would be to acquire the million entrepreneurs we want to start off our Shika journey with and use those customers as a springboard to acquire the many, many other entrepreneurs across the continent by building solutions and services that they like and they need. So in the next 12 months, we sort of aspire to have a million active customers monthly, five active products, one in lending, one in savings, one in business information and news, and of course, e-commerce, a B2B e-commerce play built in.
Many of our listeners are either just about to start their scaling journey or are thinking about or actually going through it right now. What's the biggest tip you can give them?
Alignment. You have to have a team that is super aligned, understands the vision, understands what the objectives are. It has to be a cohesive team. There has to be radical openness, radical honesty, truthfulness, because the boat during the scaling period is quite bumpy and that teamwork is quite necessary. There's nothing worse than hiring the wrong person. Ensuring that you're hiring somebody that will fit into the team and the team dynamic is critical. In addition to that, is to pick the right partners. Just like your team, the right scaling partners are critical because they can make or break you. And so even with our banking partners, I have some members of my team who are not amused that I'm not sort of throwing my net wide. But there's certain banks that you just know you don't want to partner with just because of the alignment or the misalignment of vision. So it might be nice to have them on board now, but later on they might be more of a pain than an asset.
Just maybe dive into a bit of detail over here. So you mentioned alignment, you mentioned the right team, the right partners. Is there a specific process that you go through in order to get comfortable with people and companies? So you do make the right choice when the time comes to make the decision?
In terms of team, over time, you sort of have built the competence within your own team. And if you're in a particular vertical, you attract particular types of people to your brand and to your vision. And so that's number one. A lot of people do come knocking at the door and say, you know, we like what you're doing. Can we be part of your journey? And so usually that's the first step. Are they interested in, are we aligned on vision? The other thing that is very key to us is the competency. So yes, it's nice to be aligned, but what do you bring to the table? What skill sets do you have? And do they complement those that we have? And then of course, I have a very rudimentary thing I do. It's called the beer test. Can I have a beer with this guy because, or her, with this lady? Because, and excuse my French, you want to know that you have the backing of your partners. Because during the scale-up, as I said earlier, the board does get really rocky and you don't want blame games and you want people who are focused on solving problems. You want to have a partner who, even when things are thick, you're okay with them being by your side and they're okay with you being by their side. Those are the three things for me.
Got it. And it sounds like in the middle of that is the relationship side of things, which you've alluded to throughout the chat today.
Yeah, I think the businesses, the greatest businesses in the world were built off a combination of things, and relationships was one of those key things that mattered. People hear about Amazon and Google, but they never take the magnifying glass to understand what relationships actually are behind this whole thing. And you find very interesting nuances once you start investigating.
Very insightful. And listen, Kevin, thanks for coming on the show today. Before we wrap up, how can people find and connect with you and Alternative Circle?
The best way to reach me is through Twitter and LinkedIn. My LinkedIn profile is Kevin Mutiso, KevinMutiso. Twitter is at Kevin Mutiso, one word. And you could probably reach me on kevin.mutiso@gmail.com if you have any burning questions you'd like to ask.
Great. You've been an amazing guest and looking forward to hearing the rest of your story and your journey as you progress into those the next few months and also obviously the next few years. Thanks, mate.
Thank you so much, Richard. It was a lot of fun talking to you.
If you like the show, please share with one other person who you think will benefit and follow me on LinkedIn. It would be great to connect with you.